Hi, and welcome to Hear Now the News. I'm Jerry Barmash. Ken Singleton is my guest today. He's been a constant in the Yankees broadcast booth for years. He retired at the end of the season after nearly two decades on the YES Network. We'll chat about his future plans, a look back at his major league career, and how he parlayed that into a successful second career. Ken also discusses what joining the Yankees and getting drafted by the Mets meant for a native New Yorker. Great to have you joining me today, Ken.
Thank you, Jerry. It's a pleasure to speak with you again. Yes, we talked in the past, and, you know, it's gotten to the point now where I might not be talking to too many people from this point on.
I'm glad we could get connected setting up this retirement. You've been talking about it for the last few years, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. I came close a couple of years ago, and it seems that after each season since then, I've been thinking about it. My boss has always talked me out of it, John Filippelli. And, you know, he's made it a point every year. He even asked me this year, too, again, what do you think? You know, you come back, you do as many games as you want, you do them where you want. But it's time. There are other priorities that have taken over now that I don't think I could do much more in this game. As far as a player, I played in the World Series, All-Star Games, Championship Series, broadcasting over the years with the Major League Baseball International. I did World Series and Championship Series and All-Star Games. So I just felt as though, 20 years on YES, 25 years with the Yankees. Before YES, it was the MSG Network. So I've been broadcasting for 37 years. I have grandkids now that are growing up, Jerry. I don't know if you have any, but the fact is they're very important to me, and they're playing sports now, and I don't like missing their games. So that's one thing I'm really looking forward to, that I get such a kick out of them that – you know, when you have your own kids growing up, you got to work. You know, you got to get things done. You got to pay off mortgages and college loans and all those sort of things. Well, all those things are done now. So now I could just sit back and relax and watch my grandkids.
Will you miss the games? I mean, you've been really a regular at the ballpark since, I guess, since the mid to late 60s.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, I started in my first big league season was 1970. So I haven't worked as many games in the last few years, so I get a chance to see some of their games, but it only whetted my appetite even more to see more of them because these kids are good. My grandson is a good baseball player, football and basketball player, and my granddaughters are fantastic soccer players. So I love seeing their games. They live about 2 hours from us, so I have to drive a ways, but I don't mind driving up there. Spend a day, then we'll go out to dinner after the games, and then I'll just drive back home after.
You must have a few highlights being with the Yankees through this run.
Oh, most definitely. I think back to the Jeter years, of course, the late 90s, early 2000s. Those are some of the best teams ever. That 1998 team, I believe I broadcast 100 games on TV that year, and they won 72 of them. I always tell people I felt like the weatherman in San Diego. I mean, I had good news every day. So it was a lot of fun covering that team, and it's been fun covering them over the years. Our stats guy mentioned to me after I announced my retirement that since I've been with the Yankees, they're like 694 games over 500. So that makes it a lot of fun. You know, I like winning as a player. I like bringing good news as a telecaster, broadcaster. That works out to about 95 wins a season. So that's going to put you in the playoffs most years or every year if you look at it that way. Yeah. So it's been a fun team to cover. Also, Jerry, it gave me a chance to go back to where I grew up. I grew up in New York. I was born in the city, grew up in Westchester County. So it's like a homecoming, although I don't live in New York anymore. I live in Maryland and Florida. I spent a lot of afternoons and evenings on Amtrak going back and forth, but it was worth it all those years.
New Yorker, as you say, from New York City, originally Westchester. Were you a Yankee fan growing up?
Yeah, that's a good question. I really wasn't. I admired the Yankees because they seemed to be in the World Series every year when I was a kid. But my favorite team was the Giants and the early days in San Francisco when Willie Mays and McCovey and Cepeda and all those guys were there. They were a great team. I Willie Mays is my favorite player. I felt he could do no wrong on a baseball field, and he usually didn't. One thing I admired about him, he played just about every single day. There were no days off as far as Willie Mays was concerned. He felt that people came to see him play, and that's what he was going to do.
You mentioned Jeter. Was he your favorite player to cover over these years with the Yankees?
Yeah, among others. He certainly he's a Hall of Famer now and a well-earned Hall of Fame career. You know, Mariano, I really admired, not only for his ability to play and probably the greatest closer of all time, but the man that he is. Whenever I got to speak to him, he always had time. I kidded him the other day when I saw him. I said, you know, Mariano, he came in the booth the other day. It was last Friday night. He came in the booth, and I said, you know, when you're working in the booth, you got to stay for at least 9 innings. I said, it's not that one is one inning and gone, like you're used to doing. But I did remind him how good he was, how much I admired him. When he came in the game, the fans at the stadium were reaching for their car keys. They knew it was going to be over soon, and he was that good. All kinds of players with the Yankees. Paul O'Neill, when David Cone was there, he was very accommodating. They all were good. You know, Joe Torre, Joe Girardi, and now Aaron Boone. These are all tremendous managers. I just think that the Yankee organization, as much winning as they've done over the years and made my job easy or easier, I would say that it was quite a pleasure for me to work with the Yankees all those years.
By the way, I just want to point out again, for people who are not aware of people, you know, it's probably interesting that even though you talk about, I guess, your career and you show some tidbits and trivia, mm-hmm. there are probably people who don't realize that you actually had a 14-year major league career at this point.
And relatively good one, according to a lot of people. I felt that, I was a good player. I don't think I was among the upper echelon, but I was close on some days. You know, I did when I first got the Yankee job. George Steinbrenner said that, our fans might not like you. And I said, how come? He said, because you did too many bad things against our team while you were with the Orioles. And in those days, the Yankees and the Orioles were big rivals, along with the Red Sox. It was quite a race every single year as to who was going to win the division. And in those days, there was no wild card. You had to win the division to go to the playoffs.
Yeah, I was going to say I didn't like you as a Yankee fan growing up in the 70s because you were always you seemed to be a Yankee killer. You probably hit them very well. The Guidry's, the Figueroa's.
Well, Figueroa, yeah. Guidry, not so much. Guidry was one of the tougher pitchers I faced over the years. He was really no picnic. I think I hit, maybe less than 200 against him. So I remember it was my dad. My mom and dad were still living in New York at the time. And when I came to New York with the Orioles, I wouldn't stay with the team. I'd stay with my parents in the house that I grew up in. And when I was on my way to the stadium, my dad would say, you know who's pitching tonight? I'd say, yeah, it's Guidry. And he said, what are you going to do? I said, well, maybe he'll walk me. And because he was just that tough on me. I think I only hit one home run against him all the years I faced him.
Was it the Orioles against the Yankees in the what they call the Thurman Munson game? I feel like it was.
Yes, it was. Yeah, it was. That was quite an emotional evening at Yankee Stadium. It, even for us as the visiting team, the Orioles, it was the stadium was, if you can imagine, a hot, humid August night. And it was almost as if the stadium was ready to break out in tears or rain, if you will. It was that kind of night. And it was strange not to see Thurman across the way. I mean, I had competed against him for years. We were like friendly rivals. I can recall every spring training. Well, the Yankees trained in Fort Lauderdale in those days, and we trained in Miami. So we would play them the first two games of the exhibition season every year, either in open in Lauderdale or open in Miami. And as you're passing on the field, I would see Thurman, we doing our sprints before the game. And I'd wish him good luck, good health during the course of the season. But we both knew from that point on, it was on. It was starting with the exhibition game that day. I can recall one year we started in Fort Lauderdale and Earl Weaver, our now Hall of Fame manager, and very feisty as he was, we're playing our first game of exhibition season, and Earl, as we're getting off the bus in Fort Lauderdale, turned to us and said, I can't use the words that he said, but I can use paraphrase. And he said, these are the guys we have to beat all year, so we might as well start today. And I'm thinking to myself, well, this is kind of an exhibition game. Nobody's going to remember the score of this game in 5 days. It's going to be over with. So that particular day, we scored 7 runs in the first inning. And I led off the game with a double. And as I was coming up for the second time in the first inning, I looked at Earl and I said, well, how are we doing? And he looked at me and says, go up there and hit another double. As if, and then I thought to myself, this man will never be satisfied. But, and he loved to win. He hated losing. And I was fortunate enough the years I was with the Orioles, 10 years, we never had a losing season, that I played not only for a manager that hated to lose, but I played with a lot of players that didn't like it either. And a lot of great players, Hall of Famers, Hall of Fame manager. And not only did we have Hall of Famers, we had a group of very good players. And that's why we were big rivals of the Yankees and the Red Sox in those days.
And in that, I just wanted to point out, in that Thurman Munson game, I'm sure you know, the big hit at the end was from a man who would be your broadcast partner for several years thereafter, Bobby Mercer.
Yeah, Bobby got, he had a big day that day. He drove in all 5 runs, and we lost 5-4. And speaking of the only home run I ever hit off Guidry, it was in that game. Hmm. And I think it was a 2-run homer, and I was having a really good year that year. I think they finished 2nd in the MVP that year. And it was one of those days when we had a big lead on the division, so it wasn't a critical game, if you know what I mean, Jerry. I think we had an 8-game lead at the time. And we lost the game, and as I'm walking off the field, they didn't call them walk-offs in those days. Bobby got the hit that won the game in the bottom of the 9th. As I'm walking off the field, I sit at my in the clubhouse at my locker, and I'm thinking to myself, well, if the Yankees are going to win one game, let it be that one. Mm-hmm. We'll get them next time. And it was because it was such an emotional night. Their players, you could see they were dog tired because they went to Thurman's funeral in Ohio earlier in the day and then flew all the way back and played us that night. And they showed a lot of grit to come back and win that game. We took an early lead and looked like, you know, it's just going to be another typical Oriole game that year, that we were going to win another game. We ended up winning 102 games that year, 57 losses. And it was a great year for us, but it was a bad year for baseball with Thurman passing away.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, mentioned Bobby, about your broadcast partners. And what will you miss most about not being, you know, in the booth?
Well, I think that, as I said, we had a good team to cover, number one. But the professionals that you work with, you know, I'll go all the way back, and I'll start with Jim Cott and Bobby. Those were the first two guys that I really spent time with in the booth. They're both not only, you know, very good broadcasters, they were good players. So they really knew the game backwards and forwards. And I think that I can recall walking down the street, Lexington Avenue, New York City, and a cab driver would roll down the window. And, you know, Cott was a pitcher and I was a hitter. So we kind of butted heads. But we did it purposely to make the fans realize pitchers and hitters don't really get along. So cab drivers would roll down the window and they'd yell out, don't let Cott get on you about the hitters. You know, so I would kind of laugh and chuckle about it. You know, Bobby and I shared a lot of good times. We went out to dinner on the road. Bobby knew all kinds of great restaurants around the country. And whenever he said, Singy, let's go out to dinner, I wouldn't hesitate. I said, where are we going? Now, more modern day with on Yes, with Michael Kay, you know, I work with him the longest, 20 years now. Hmm. We got quite emotional when I made my announcement. You know, he's not only a tremendous broadcaster, he's a good friend. And, you know, we had this special relationship on the air that really worked. I think a lot of people said we were an excellent team. Of course, when you have Paul O'Neill and David Cone and John Flaherty in the booth with you, those guys know what they're talking about, too. I can't leave out Meredith Marakovich because she's an excellent reporter. She is, I remember when she came to join us 10 years ago, you know, I was thinking, well, let's see what she could do. Well, now she's done it. I mean, she's fantastic. She really has her finger on the pulse of what's going on with the Yankees and in the clubhouse and on the team. Now, it's been a little harder to do with Zoom now because not allowed in the clubhouses. But I just think that she's done a good job. And if somewhere along the line, you know, there's more of an expanded role, I think she can do it, whether it's with the Yankees or anyplace else. You're starting to see those changes in broadcast booths around the country in all sports. There's more women coming aboard. And, you know, I think that's a good thing, to be honest with you, that in a way that's growing the game, especially if you get more women interested in watching the games. It's hard for me to get my wife to watch a game with me, whatever sport it is. It has to be one of the local teams here in Maryland. She doesn't watch the Orioles because a lot of people don't anymore because they're not very good. But she'll watch a Ravens football game just for the excitement on a Sunday. She'll give me a few hours on a Sunday to watch a football game.
She didn't watch you. Did she? Did you get yes locally? Did she watch that?
Yeah, but I don't know. She's seen me enough on TV. I don't know if she watched the Yankee games. You know, she's a writer. So, you know, she's busy in her office here at home. Her office is downstairs. I usually don't get in there when she's working. And my office is upstairs. She will come in here when I'm working, though.
You must have, I guess it also helped you were going to retire, but then with COVID, you guys were doing a lot more from home. So that, I guess, extended it a little bit, right?
Yeah, in a way. But, Jerry, I didn't like doing games that way. I just felt that we were a beat behind. You couldn't really see everything. The last couple of games I did at the stadium, the fans were there. And to me, I missed that energy. I realized it right away. That I miss the energy of the fans. I miss the energy and the smells of the ballpark. We did a series earlier this year. Michael and I were at Yankee Stadium. The Yankees are on the West Coast. So we're sitting in an empty Yankee Stadium doing the games. And when you're leaving Yankee Stadium on a West Coast game, it's 1:30 in the morning. And you're walking around. It's kind of eerie in there. It's kind of dark. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, I hope they can get back to normal soon where the announcers can travel. I miss that. I did think that by the All-Star break this year, we would be able to do so. I truly wanted to get out to San Francisco when the Yankees were working, doing that Oakland series. Although the Yankees play Oakland, they stay in San Francisco, which to me is one of the greatest cities in the country. And I didn't get to do that. So, you know, in the future, I'm planning golf trips with my buddies. I think we're going to go to the Bay Area and just hang out and play some of the better courses around there and, you know, sample the great restaurants in San Francisco, maybe go to Napa Valley and hang out there too. But that's in the future. You know, that's probably next year.
Are you a good golfer?
You know, no golfer is going to admit how good he is, but I'd play all right. You know, let's see. Well, my handicap's really coming down because I got to play a lot more because I haven't been doing many games. I've been shooting in the high 70s lately. So,
that's good.
We're getting there. We're getting there. I want to chop at least. I want to get to at least even par if I can.
Were you good at other sports?
I got a basketball scholarship to Hofstra University. But I knew I was a baseball player. You know, I knew baseball was my first love. When I was in high school, I was supposed to play football. But my dad went to one of my Bronx Federation League games, and he happened to sit near some scouts, and he heard one of the scouts say, this kid has a chance, you know, if he can stay healthy and injury-free, and he looks like he could be a good player. I was about 15 or 16 at the time and still in high school, and my dad came home that night and said, you can forget about playing football now. You're not playing football. And the coach actually came to my house, and my dad said, no. He can play basketball, but he's not going to play all three over at school, at high school, at Mount Vernon High School. So I played baseball and basketball. We had a good basketball program and a good baseball team, too. I really loved the other sports, but yeah. I could see my dad's point because I knew where I wanted to get to. And at that point, the scouts were beginning to follow me at 15 and 16. So when I heard my dad say, the scout said you had a chance, I kind of felt I did, too, because I was one of the best players on the field, even though I was playing against older competition. I was playing at 15 and 16. I was playing against guys who had been off to the minor leagues, didn't make it, and came back. So I was playing against some pretty good competition. If they were good enough to be signed at one time, maybe they weren't good enough to make it to the big leagues or advance in the minors. but somebody thought they were good enough to be a professional at one time. So I'm playing against former professionals when I was 15 and 16 years old and more than holding my own. So I think that that gave my dad the insight that, you know, maybe this kid does have a chance. You know, we're going to make sure he goes to school, but let's see what happens from that point on.
Right. You have a couple more minutes?
Sure. No problem. Okay.
I wanted to ask you about just overall from your career in sports to transition into doing broadcasting.
Yeah, that was an interesting way that it happened. When I was playing, getting towards the end of my career, in 1983, Tony Kubek, the esteemed Hall of Fame broadcaster now, worked for the Yankees for a number of years, also with NBC. He came to me and he asked me towards the end of that season if I was interested in working as an analyst, if the Blue Jays, who were coming into their own as an organization, if they made the playoffs, was I interested in going up to Canada and being an analyst on a Canadian network? Because Tony worked not only NBC, he worked the Canadian network as well. But he couldn't be two places at once. And, of course, he was going to choose NBC, the American network. And I said, sure, I'd do it. But it didn't happen because we won the World Series that year. That opportunity never came about. We won the World Series. So the next season, I'm playing, and it was my last year playing. And Tony got in touch with me over the winter, and he said that they're starting a new sports network in Canada. Are you interested in broadcasting Blue Jay games? Because Tony couldn't do those. There was a conflict with his schedule at NBC. He said, can you do 20 games? And, you know, I talked to my wife about it, and she said, sure, you know, you want to do it? She said, are they going to pay you? I said, yeah, they're going to pay me. So she said, yeah, go ahead. And, I did the games in spring training, and then just before spring training ended, the Montreal Expos joined the network. And I had played for Montreal, so people in Montreal knew me. So they came to me again, and they said, well, instead of doing 20 games, you'll still do these 20 games, but we're going to add 60 Montreal games onto your schedule. Do you mind doing it? And so I talked to my wife. She said, they're going to pay you more, aren't they? I said, yeah. And she said, well, yeah, go ahead. So instead of doing 20 games my first year, I did 80 games. It was going really well. About 3 years in, the Expos came to me and said, we really like your work, your TV work. We'd like you to work for us full time. And I said to them, well, not every game's on television. They said, well, what that means is we want you to do radio as well. I had never done a radio game. I had never done play-by-play before, as always an analyst. But that meant I was going to have to do all the games. I told my wife, look, I'm going to have to do 162 games. Is that okay? She said, they're going to pay you, right? I said, yeah. They're going to pay you more. I said, yeah, because I'm doing more games. So she said, yeah, go ahead. Well, I got to work on radio and TV with the great Dave Van Horn, who is now a Hall of Fame broadcaster, and he does a few games still for the Marlins on radio. But I learned so much from Dave. I got to do the middle three innings of the game, 3, 4, and 7. Those are the innings that I did and on play-by-play. So that's where I honed my play-by-play skills while still being an analyst the remainder of the game. Working with Dave was a pleasure. I was 12 years with Montreal, and then the opportunity came to come to New York and work for the Yankees, and the rest is history. 37 years in the booth. I've never been away from a Major League Stadium since 1970. So you can see why it's time to stop now. It's just I've been in the big leagues for over 50 years. And you know, there's nothing better than playing, Jerry. There's nothing better, but broadcasting is a very close second. I really enjoyed it. I never got to do radio in New York. I really enjoyed radio. It's sort of like doing television with no tie on and your feet up. You know, you can do it that way. It's a little more relaxed. You have to be more descriptive because you're the eyes and the ears of the audience. And on TV, you have the pictures to help you out. And you have the director directing the game and showing the pictures. They're both fun to do. But I think that after all these years, just doing the Yankees in Montreal, they were good some years. They were more like a 500 team or a little bit below that some other years. But you found ways to get games done, even when the team was losing. That didn't happen much with the Yankees. You felt when the Yankees would lose or go on a little losing streak that they'd come back pretty strong every single year.
Were you welcomed by the Yankees as a rival with the Orioles?
Yeah, that's a good question, too, because when I first got the job, as I mentioned, George Steinbrenner said, well, our fans aren't going to like you. I think it took a little while, but the fans, after a while, they realized, well, this guy's from New York. Number one, I was from New York, and they knew that. So I knew how to pronounce all the names of the towns in the area, like Ronkonkoma and Mamaroneck and, you know, all these places that you might give somebody right. from not from New York a little bit of trouble. So I from that standpoint, I think they were willing to give me a chance. And after a while, they realized that, you know, my job's easier when the Yankees win. I was all in, you know, with the Yankees winning games. I'm all about winning, whether it was with the Orioles or, you know, even now with the Yankees. But the fact is that over the years, I didn't get that much anymore about being an Oriole. I just think that, in fact, a lot of the on Twitter lately, a lot of people would say, well, we knew you played for the Orioles, but you're a member of the Yankee family now. You've been with us a long time. And when you go into people's homes and businesses and they hear your voice and they recognize your voice and you become like a special guest in their homes, especially when the Yankees are winning.
Right. Did you kind of hone your craft on the fly night after night?
Well, in a way, yes. But when I was growing up in New York, I watched and listened to a lot of baseball. And early on, I got to listen to, you know, Mel Allen and Red Barber. And when the Mets came along, Lindsey Nelson, Bob Murphy and Ralph Kiner. My dad was a big Mets fan, so the Mets were on quite a bit. Then, you know, Joe Garagiola, Tony Kubek, you know, all those guys. So I listened, and it's almost as if I was learning the cadence of how to do a game as a youngster. I can remember my mom coming into my bedroom thinking I was asleep, but I had my transistor radio on underneath the pillow and I was listening to the games. And those things stick with you. You know, you get the feeling of how a game should be done. So those are some of the best broadcasters in baseball history. There's several Hall of Famers in the names that I mentioned, maybe all of them. So I just think that growing up in New York was really special. I don't think I would be the person that I am now if I had grown up somewhere else in the country. In New York, it's so diverse. You learn to deal with people from different cultures and languages. And just how to get along with people and to have a certain amount of respect for everybody. And I think that in other parts of the country, you might not get that because it's not quite as diverse as the New York area. And I just don't think I'd have been the same person that I am now if I had grown up somewhere else.
Interesting. Yeah. It was like you had almost all these resources right at your
disposal. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. And different well, if you like different types of food, we're better than New York.
With Yes, even though you did play-by-play, you didn't do it primarily, I guess, because Michael was usually the main one. So it was always a treat when we would get to hear you, either on a West Coast game or if Michael was off, because you have a distinct style, a very smooth style doing play-by-play, and I miss that. Now I'll miss it even more with you not doing games at all.
Thank you very much. I did like the West Coast games. You know, some of the other guys didn't like going out to the West Coast. Oh, it's too far. You know, it is quite far. You know, Seattle is, it seems like the other side of the world. But Seattle is a beautiful city. My parents were married there a long time ago. So I always had an affinity for that city. When I was playing, I really played well in Seattle. They weren't very good in those days. And I just used to hammer them when at the Kingdome, which I felt was the world's greatest hitting ballpark. And Anaheim, the weather is always so beautiful. It was almost too perfect in a way. And then you go to Oakland. Oakland's sort of in the middle. You know, the weather's okay. You know, it's not too cool. It's not too hot. And we stayed in San Francisco, which was beautiful too. So the West Coast games I really like doing. I always would mention to the fans that stayed up late that, you know, we appreciate the fact that you're up this late watching the games and staying with the Yankee broadcast during this early in the morning. We always used to mention when it, well, it's 9 o'clock on the West Coast, it's the start of a new day on the East Coast. Thanks for being with us. And you know what? I got a lot of feedback from the fans on that, that they appreciate it. I also got feedback from people who are watching in England and overseas that, you know, it might be midnight on the East Coast, but it's 3 a.m. here or whatever they were. And so you don't realize the reach that your telecast has until you hear from people all over the world that are Yankee fans. And there are Yankee fans everywhere, everywhere.
Yeah, that's the other thing with New York and with the Yankees. It has that reach. And again, when they're winning, but that's true. I just wanted to go back one more time with coming from New York. And when you were, this is going back to the beginning, but when you were drafted by the Mets, was that a big deal?
It was in my house, yeah. As I said, you know, the Dodgers and Giants had left, and my dad was a Dodger fan, and he couldn't bring himself to root for the Yankees. So for a few years, he went without a team until the Mets came about. And, of course, when they first came in, they were horrible. I mean, they lost 120 games their first year. I remember for my birthday, my dad took me and about 11 of my friends down to the Polo Grounds. This is before Shea Stadium was built. And I can't remember what birthday it was, but we were still pretty young. And we took the bus and the subway, and all the time we were going, my dad just counting kids, you know, just to make sure he didn't lose anybody. And that particular day, the Giants were my favorite team, and they scored 7 runs in the first inning against the Mets. And my dad looked at me and said, "We came all the way down here for this." You know, we were living in Mount Vernon. And the Giants won both games. Willie Mays hit a home run, so I was happy. It was, you know, just growing up in that area and being drafted by the Mets, my hometown team, my dad was very happy. It took me a relatively short amount of time to get the big leagues. It took me 3 years in the system to get there. I can remember one special day I do remember. It was Father's Day. And my dad worked at the post office in New York for 30-something years, the big one right across from Madison Square Garden. And he had about 10 of his friends with him. And one of his friends called me over away from the group. And he said, "You know, it's your dad's very proud of you. You know, you're a big league ball player now." He said that, and it's great that you're important in all this and all that sort of thing. He said, "But if you grow up to be half the man your dad is, you're going to be really something special." And that stayed with me. It showed me that there was respect my dad had from his peers where he was working. And it just so happened I hit a home run that day on Father's Day. And, you know, I remember when I came home that night, my dad had the biggest smile on his face. And I did, too, because I was proud of my dad. He was he never really pushed me to play ball. He knew I was good. He didn't have a chance to see me play much when I was growing up in Little League or Pony League or American Legion because he was working so hard to pay off the house and all that sort of thing, he and my mom. But the payoff was for them. Was after they retired, they moved down to Baltimore to be near their grandkids. And my two oldest boys were around then. And so the last 3 years of my playing career, they got to go to every single home game. And which that was the payoff for them to see me play in the big leagues for all those years, as opposed to seeing me play Little League ball and Pony League ball because they were at work. They couldn't get to the games.
Sounds like you were close with your family, though.
You know, I missed them a lot. They were a great influence on my grandkids, especially my mom. My dad passed away first, but, yeah, they were very special people. And, as I said about growing up in New York, maybe not being the person I am now, I certainly wouldn't have been the person I am now, without their guidance over the years.
Well, you said about going forward, you're going to have a lot more time to be with your family and your grandchildren. What other things are on your short-term list?
Yeah. It's funny you asked that because I finally got to power wash the deck the other day. You know, I drove my wife, Suzanne, to get her oil changed today, take her car over there. But I'm going to play a lot of golf with my buddies. That's what we do now. That's how we compete. That's how golf is like a personal challenge game. And that's the way I look at it. We don't play team sports anymore. So it's a personal challenge and a challenge amongst ourselves as to who's going to pay for lunch. That's the high man on the day is going to pay for lunch. So a lot of my former teammates, you know, Scott McGregor, Tippy Martinez, Al Bunbury, Ross Grimsley. We all play. Mike Torres. I play with Mike in the wintertime in Florida. You know, after it gets too cold around here after the holidays, my wife and I leave for Florida. We have a place down there, too. And Mike lives down there. Mike Torres lives down there. And now Ross Grimsley does. So I'll play a lot of golf with them, too. So that's what I'm looking forward to. Looking forward to traveling. Bunbury and I are trying to lay out this golf trip that we can travel all around the country once next spring comes. And I think we're going to get a travel agent to kind of lay it all out for us and hook up with some of our teammates around the country and play as we go along. Just kind of make a big circle and end up back here in Maryland.
Wow. And take the wives, or is this just the players?
Oh, this is just us. My wife said, no, she couldn't do that. my wife is planning to go to Greece with one of her friends this summer. So maybe we'll go concurrent with her trip. We'll go on our golf trip.
Do you, and will you keep watching sports?
Yeah, I will. The thing about it though, Jerry, I won't feel as guilty as if I miss a Yankee game. I told Michael on the air the other day, one of the reasons why I'm stopping, because my wife knows it, when baseball season comes around, I'm all in. You know, I have to see firsthand what's going on with the Yankees. Either that or I'm driving around. I got the game on the radio. And you know, now in this day and age with Sirius, you can hear any game. So that way I can get away and not feel guilty. You know, the other sports, you know, football, I love to watch football and basketball. Those are more, you know, of course, fall and winter sports. But as far as I told Michael, either I'm all in or I got to be all out. So that's why, you know, people have said, well, why don't you just do 9 games a year? But I can't do it that way because I'm all in. I got to watch the other games or watch the other teams that the Yankees are going to play, the games that I'm doing. And I just didn't feel like giving that time away anymore. I just wanted to spend more time, like I said, with the grandkids, feeling, you know, when my grandson was playing a Little League game, I'd go to the game, but I had my iPad with me so I could watch the Yankees at the same time. Now I want to be able to just concentrate on his game and just because we go out to dinner after and we discuss what happened in the game. His dad was a pro too. My son Justin was a professional baseball player for a while too. So between the two of us, we're going to make this kid a good player. He's good. He's 12 years old and he's really good already.
Wow. I have to ask you before I let you go. The Yankees gave you a nice send-off with throwing out the first pitch. Tell me about that.
Yeah, that was very nice of them to do that. They also gave me – the team signed a home plate for me. It's down in sort of like my man cave now, and that was really nice of them to do. Aaron Boone actually walked halfway to the mound and gave me a hug, and you know, he's a special guy. I wish things had worked out better for the Yankees this year. Maybe they will next year. They definitely have to make some changes, but I hope he's not one of them.
Do you think that that's a possibility? They're already saying that.
It could be. You know, you never know. But you got to remember, in the 3 full seasons that he's been there, you know, outside of 2020 when there were only 60 games, the Yankees have averaged 98 wins a year. So I think that you think twice before you bring somebody else in. I think you have to make some changes on your roster before you change a manager who's been that good.
All right, final question. Who's going to win the World Series this year?
Oh, that's a good question. The Giants seem like they're a team of destiny, and that was my favorite team growing up. But, Jerry, it's harder to win now. There are more layers in the playoffs that you have to navigate. And it's not necessarily that the best team wins. It's the team that's the hottest for that week to 10 days that's going to win. And that could be any one of them to get in the playoffs. So that's how it makes it more difficult to pick. The Rays are good. I don't know if they're as good as the Giants, because I don't see the Giants quite as much. But I know the Giants won 107 games this year. I know the Dodgers won 106. I know the Rays won 100. These are very good baseball teams. The Yankees are chasing the Rays. They're also chasing the Red Sox. They're also kind of the heels on all three of them are the Toronto Blue Jays. The American League East had 4 teams win 90 games or more this year. That's a tough division to win. It's almost like you're in the playoffs right from the beginning of the season. So I just think that it's hard for me to pick one of these teams to do it. I'd like to be right, but I'm sure I'm going to be wrong.
Well, you've been right for many, many years, and we've been loving watching you and listening to you. And it's been a pleasure to listen to you and watch you and having you on today. Ken Singleton, thank you so much.
Jerry, it's my pleasure. Enjoy the playoffs and the World Series, and enjoy future Yankee years.
Thank you, and enjoy your retirement.
Oh, I will.
Quite a talent with the bat and microphone. Thanks again to Ken Singleton. Some Here Now the News news. While you can still listen at the usual spots, full video is available on YouTube as I join the ETB Network for expanded content. Find out more on Twitter at ETB Network and at Here Now the News 1, where you can also send any comments, or you can email me herenowthenewsjb@gmail.com. As always, my thanks for listening and your support.